Hello and welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast. This is episode 128 for April 10th, 2008. Today we'll discuss the unfortunate closing of one of PC gaming's brightest lights, learn why Uwe Boll's next boxing match may be with director Michael Bay, examine why the Arizona legislature is going all Big Brother to protect you from yourselves, and find out which unexpected developer Rockstar recently bought. All this in a brand new edition of Master PC Theater awaits you after this brief musical interlude. I'm Chuck Osborne, Senior Executive Editor, and I'll be your host this week. We're joined today by our Editor-in-Chief, Kristen Salvatore.
Greetings!
Senior Associate Editor, Dan Stapleton.
Tally-ho!
Our Senior Executive Intern, Norman Chan.
Aloha!
And, as always, our producer, Andy Bauman.
Hello, Chuck. Fantastic intro. Very eloquent.
Oh. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. We're going to kind of start off with some sad news this week. Sad news for us. Our friends down the street in the city at Games for Windows magazine have shut down, unfortunately, this week. And though I imagine a lot of readers might think that we'd be gloating about this, we're not at all, in fact.
No, it sucks. It's terrible.
It really does suck. I mean, especially, you know, Kristen, you used to work over there back when it was... CGW.
I did indeed.
Yeah, and for the people who cover video games and especially PC gaming, it's a pretty small, close knit group. And you know, we see these guys when we go to events, you know, or E3 or anything like that. And you know, while a lot of people think that we're probably like the Hatfields and McCoys or we're feuding or something like that, it's really not the case. I mean, we all tend to get along very well, and so news like this is definitely not happy news for us. And so we're very glad that the guys over there, the editorial staff at least, will be keeping their jobs. They will be working on their online properties over at the company. One of the reasons, though, that we do bring this up is that I know one of the first things that people think of is that this is probably like another example of why PC gaming is dying, and that's really not the case. And the reason why is because their parent company had actually filed for bankruptcy a month ago, and they had already closed down their Xbox magazine and their PlayStation magazine before closing down their computer magazine. So it really isn't so much a take on PC gaming or a result of any perceived downfall in PC gaming as it is, you know, the fortunes of their parent company.
I think it's also just another example of how media is changing, which we all know that's not new news, certainly to anybody here or, you know, to anybody who's a media consumer. Like, you know, PC Gamer as a magazine is extremely healthy, but I don't think any of us here have pretended that things are exactly as they were or that they're exactly as they're going to end up. It's very much a media that's evolving, an evolving media landscape, let's put it that way. So, you know, exactly. I think, yeah, some of what's gone on actually, certainly for Ziff, but I guess we should say, like, the press release that they released, though the magazine is going away, says that they're actually turning Games for Windows into, like, the PC channel of 1UP. I don't think any of us completely knows what that's going to look like yet, and I don't even know if they know. But you know, they're still keeping the Games for Windows name. It's not going away altogether. So I think it's just, you know, it'll be interesting to see how I'm certainly watching and hoping for the best for all those guys. But it'll be interesting to see how that development pans out.
Yeah, we should also, you know, take a moment to assuage anybody's fears that we're going to be next. We're not closing anytime soon.
We're not going anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously, you know, we've all been here long enough. We've received, you know, lots of letters from you guys out there wondering, you know, well, the emails usually start off with, you know what I miss? I miss those days when, you know, the magazine was like 400 pages long. And, you know, we miss those days as well. But it's like Kristen was saying, it's sort of a realism in print magazines right now that, you know, advertising is going away, and so the magazines are getting a bit thinner, and so we're just having to kind of, like, you know, change with the flow. But the state of PC Gamer, at least, is very strong.
I thought we were doing less pages because we're lazy.
Totally it, right?
Yeah, we get called that too. We get called.
And there is, like, if there's any upside to the fact that the media landscape, as we here in this office know it, is changing, it's that there are, like, big opportunities to try new things that people wouldn't have tried before. Because in general, you know, businesses that are successful kind of don't mess with success. So I think it would have been a lot harder to come up with kind of wacky new things to try out back when magazines and even PC Gamer was in its 400-page, I'll call it the heyday. I wouldn't necessarily say it's the heyday. I think there are different heydays, but I think it would have been a lot harder to maybe try out some of the new stuff that we have. People keep saying, Kristen says there's stuff on the horizon. There is stuff on the horizon. It's just the wheels of progress. They turn slowly. So, you know, there are new things coming that I don't think we would have been able to try out had it not been for the fact that print is not the same as it once was. But it means it does give us a chance to, like, try out some new things, which I'm all for. I love print. I mean, I started in book publishing. I absolutely love magazines. I don't think they're going anywhere, but I really like the idea of getting to try out some different stuff. So I'm kind of all for it.
In a weird way, it does kind of relate to, you know, where PC gaming has gone, because I think for a lot of the people who say that PC gaming is dead or is dying, what that really means is that PC gaming isn't the same for me as it was 10 years ago.
It's changing.
10 years ago, yeah. It's a changing landscape, and, you know, like what you guys were talking about last week, you know, yeah, you're not going to be able to play Madden on a PC anymore, but I think personally that's probably for the best, you know, because there are games for the PC that you will be able to play just on the PC, and, you know, I don't think anybody who's playing World of Warcraft or the Sims games are going to say that, yeah, the PC's dying.
And you know what, that said, sorry, I'm just going to jump in here to champion the same message I've been championing all the hell over the place lately, which is, industry, if you're listening, this is our chance to, like, to step up and begin educating people a lot more about what you need to become a PC gamer, and educate people about the fact that you don't, if you know what you're doing when you're putting the parts together in your PC, you don't have to drop $2,000 and $3,000 to have a PC that plays the latest games. It's making me crazy lately. It's making me crazy, people.
Yeah, I know. I mean, you know, because even with, like, some of the really, really hardcore, you know, like I got so much crap, you know, for giving Crysis a high score because it had such high system requirements. Like you know, that was a reason in itself to ding it and give it a high score. And I remember in the early 90s, like, you know, you would champion those games that really pushed systems, you know, like games from Origin and everything, that those were the ones that were really, you know, selling new systems. But the great thing, as we just recently pointed out in one of our cover stories, was that you don't need to spend like $4,000 in order to make a PC that will run Crysis.
No, you just have to spend your money wisely. But, you know, again, like, that's, we're trying to educate people about how to do that. It ticks me off that the rest of the industry is not jumping on that bandwagon. So,
yeah. And not helping anything are those Vista capable stickers.
Well, you know what? What did I say yesterday? Chuck and Dan and I were in a demo yesterday for a game we'll tell you all about in a minute. But I came up with what I think is a brilliant plan. I have to call the Microsoft people. I said that all the money that they've spent on the Games for Windows initiative, they should have just spent getting, like, one PC expert to and, like, supporting them, spending, like, 3 days a week in sort of every, like, big box electronic store. Just, like, send a PC representative to every Best Buy, and that person just hangs out in the computer department, and, like, every time somebody comes in to buy a new PC, like, all the sort of random Best Buy people do their thing, and then they send them to the PC guy to actually make sure they're getting
what they want.
Oh,
she looks like Sean
Hodgman. is he available? Can we get him?
You know, I'm not sure that's really the best image that we want.
Let's get Uwe Boll.
Yeah, so moving on to some much lighter news. Well, there, you know, we have our own kind of a battle between the heavyweights. This is almost like a diva fight or something like that going on.
Did we talk about the Uwe Boll position last week?
Yes. Wait, did you guys?
No, we didn't.
No, we didn't.
It wasn't around last week.
So let's talk about that first.
You're right. So okay, this is how it started. Uwe Boll responded to all of the critics who say those movies suck, which is most of us, and said that...
Is there anybody who doesn't? I just have to ask. Have we ever run into one person who's like, Uwe Boll, he makes some good flicks?
I think there are like 79 people online.
Okay, just checking.
You know, I mean...
69 of them are related to Uwe Boll.
The best praise that I think I've ever heard was that his newest movie, for some of them, didn't suck quite so bad.
Oh,
but you know, awesome. if you go on Rotten Tomatoes and look up Alone in the Dark, which I think it holds the record for the worst reviews for any movie on there, it has 99% bad, 99% rotten. But that means there is one review that said it wasn't a bad movie. So there is somebody who thinks.
Where is it? Hang on, I'm gonna
Rotten
find
Tomatoes
that right now.
Alone in the Dark.
You guys keep going. I'm going to just...
Tara Rita's Scientist movie.
UweBullsMom.com. So anyway, wow. He sent out a challenge to everybody. He said that...
No. It wasn't really a challenge. It was brought up in an interview. A movie blog was interviewing him and says, are you aware that there's a petition out there which has 12,000 signatures from people who want you to stop making movies? And he said 12,000 signatures. That's not enough to, in his German accent. That's not enough to, you know, to get me to stop making movies. But 1 million people, if they sign a petition, I will stop making movies. And that's now your new goal.
Now maybe we use a different dictionary norm, but I call that a challenge. He's challenging people. Okay, you want me to stop making movies? Go sign this petition. If you can get 1 million people, I will stop them.
I don't. You know what? I have to be honest. I don't trust him because what he's going to turn around and be like, 1 million people were interested to hear what I, you know, like.
Yeah, those weren't a real 1 million people.
Here's here's the one Alone in the Dark review that's it's not rotten. Alone in the Dark isn't going to set the world on fire, but it largely succeeds with what it had to work with. Just don't take it seriously and you'll have a fun time.
And what it had to work with was Christian Slater and Tara Reid, right?
Yeah. That was from Michelle Alexandria at Eclipse Magazine. I'm writing to her right now.
That's very light praise indeed.
I'm writing to her right now.
So we'll play the full clip of what he said. But
basically... Well, this is afterwards. But right now there's 100... For the record, right now there's 167,000 signatures. So we are almost a fifth of the way there.
Is this online?
Online. Yeah,
what's the URL?
What's the URL?
The URL is petitiononline.com, and I think the specific petition is called Stop Dr. Uwe Boll.
Doctor?
That's what it's called, but obviously I don't think he's a doctor.
Oh, I think he is a doctor of some sort.
Stop Dr. Uwe Boll, who's not a doctor.
but he also wants for people to start a pro-Uwe petition to
make
sure that he continues making movies. And so he goes on to say, and we'll play his quote, but he basically says, I'm not a f***ing retard like Michael Bay or other running around in the business or Eli Roth making the same f***ing movies over and over again.
Well, let's play the entire clip. Can you play it, Andy, and let us hear it?
Yeah.
While you play it?
Here we go.
So, hi, here's Uwe Boll, and I have a statement to make about that internet petition. There's a petition out, Stop Uwe Boll, and I said, like, if there are 1 million people on that petition, I stop actually making movies. And I want that there's a petition also out there, like a pro ball petition. And I expect 1 million votes pro ball. And I hope somebody will set it up and you all start signing it. Because look, I'm not a f***ing retard like Michael Bay or other people running around in that business or Eli Roth making the same shitty movies over and over again. If you really look in my movies, you will see my real genius. You know, and if you go on May 23 in Postal, you will see that I deliver a movie what nobody else delivered in the last 10 years. What is way better as all that social critic George Clooney bullshit what you get every fucking weekend. So you have to really wake up and you have to see me what I am. I'm the only genius in the whole fucking business. Goodbye.
To see me for what I am, batshit crazy.
I refuse to believe that was really him. That sounded like an impersonator, doesn't it?
No, it's a video.
It's him. Yeah,
yeah.
I know. It just it sounds like a made up accent.
It sounds like Bruno.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. So anyway, Michael Bay actually pays attention to Uwe Boll. Who knew? and wrote on his own official message board, he says that, "I find people who rant like that, calling shit about both me and George Clooney, comes from someone screaming because he is not being heard. He is obviously a sad being. When you ask, do I care? Not in the slightest."
Well, and to Uwe's credit, I hate Michael Bay too. But I would rather watch a Michael Bay movie than an Uwe Boll movie.
Okay, so Dan, you actually took my bait, because this morning
it's a trap.
this morning when I was thinking about how this conversation was going to play out, I knew how much you hate Michael Bay, but it is true though. I mean, as bad as you think Michael Bay is, you'd still rather watch his films than you would Uwe Boll's because it. At least he can tell a story. You know, he has the technical skills to be able to, you know.
I wouldn't say that. I would say that at least he has a budget to make things explode real pretty.
Well, but okay. I mean, but as much as you might hate, like, one of his films, like Armageddon or Pearl Harbor or something like that, I mean, it may have more explosions in it, but, you know, he at least has the tools there that Uwe Boll lacks.
Oh, he's a tool, all right.
And
well,
Eli Roth also
is going exactly how I thought it would.
Also responded to Uwe Boll's comments, and he said he took it those comments as the greatest compliment ever. Obviously, sarcastically. But so Uwe Boll, in his statement, he wanted a pro Uwe Boll petition, right? And that petition
is
actually
the pro Boll.
Has one started?
One has started. It currently has 2,159 total signatures.
Wow.
Wow. That's a lot more than I thought I would get. I guess Uwe Boll has been signing it nonstop.
but I think a lot of people would just go and sign it. I mean, it's kind of like those people who go to vote for the worst with American Idol. You know, it's like you just kind of want to vote for the person who's so terrible because they make things more interesting.
Well, I think what we have here is an exact count of the number of internet trolls there are.
You know, I petitioned for the anti-Uwe Boll, but after this video, I really want to go Pro Boll, I think.
Okay,
turned around.
So why are you going to do that?
Oh, man, I think that anybody who just comes out and just starts throwing bile around at random people, that's awesome.
That's behavior you want to encourage, huh?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, he is entertaining. It's kind of like if there was a pro Jack Thompson petition out there, I think I might go sign it just because, I mean, he's great to listen to on a weekly basis.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for the outcome of his disbarment trial. After having read the transcripts of the court proceedings for that, I'm just really waiting to hear what the judge has to say about him because he was so incredibly disrespectful. I can't imagine that she'll be lenient.
Yeah, I was just shocked that he was never he wasn't called in for contempt of court, was he?
Not in that trial. He has been held in contempt several times in the past, though.
Yeah, I mean, wow, she was just an incredibly patient woman to deal with all that.
They're not that patient on TV. I don't understand.
Patient isn't where the ratings are at.
Yeah, on TV, man, you blink and you're held in contempt of court.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Not like Law
yeah.
and Order at all.
Oh, too bad it wasn't a small claims court case. Then he could go on TV.
Judge Joe Brown. Judge Judy or like.
Yeah, Judge Joe Brown.
Awesome.
He wouldn't take any crap.
Oh, that would be awesome on Judge Judy.
Texas justice.
Don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining.
Mr. Thompson, are you high? So moving on to more legal shenanigans. The Arizona legislature tried something. I guess it was earlier this week or last week.
Well, it's been in the works for a while, but last week it came to head.
Yeah, so they tried to pass this bill that would basically restrict content creators and would, let's see, let me get the correct wording for it. It would make content producers, publishers, and distributors liable for monetary damages if any written, audio, visual, or digital material from which they profited was judged to have been dangerous or obscene and motivated someone to commit a felony or an act of terrorism.
And in case that wasn't vague enough, I mean,
it's
like who writes these bills? I mean, how does somebody become a legislator and not have any idea of precedent or how to do this? I mean, I am not I am not a legislator, and I know that this isn't going to happen. Why are they this dumb? Unfortunately, in this case, the Arizona State Senate rejected this. So, I mean, somebody there did their homework, unlike the, you know, dozen or so other states that passed ridiculous anti-game laws. Although this was even more broad than those. This was trying to censor all media. I mean, or any content. And Chuck, you were making a point about this.
So basically, like, Grand Theft Auto 4 comes out, and it is judged to be violent and obscene in some way by the Arizona legislature, and so they're fined. We review it, or we preview it, and suddenly we're like conspirators, you know, we're accessories to the crime. Basically, right. Anyone who reported on it could be an accessory.
Or, like, our review could be judged as dangerous because it led people to dangerous content. So,
right. It say we gave it an editor's choice, and, you know, we recommended people go buy it.
Right. So, I mean, it's just absurd that anybody
thought
that would ever happen. I'm sure if this bill had targeted just video games, they probably would have passed it.
I can't imagine, though. I mean, if it had just targeted video games, I don't think it would have gone forward. I mean, and even if it had, it would have been bumped up and it would have been stricken down somewhere.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It absolutely would never have come into effect because a court challenge would have killed it instantly. They would have gotten an injunction against it, and then it would have been killed by a judge who actually knows what he's doing. In so many other states, California included, they have passed these laws just without regard to whether they're constitutional or not. So I find it hard to believe that Arizona would be the one enlightened state. And nothing against Arizona, but I don't think it's all that much smarter than any other state. So.
Well, I mean, but it does kind of like go back to the point in general of why would you even try this sort of law and make it so vague? You know, what...
Crazy.
You have to know it's going to get stricken down.
That baffles me. I have no insight to offer there because it is just completely insane.
I think someone's running for re-election.
Yeah.
And they're being tough on crime. Oh, well. On to news that's almost as strange, actually. At least to me. I don't know about you guys. So Rockstar bought Mad Dog. Rockstar, maker of GTA, and Mad Dog, which normally makes real-time strategy games. It doesn't seem to really be a marriage made in heaven.
But, unless they're planning awesome real-time strategy games.
Yeah, so, maybe.
Mad Dog's last couple of games. I mean, first, I guess most recently they did the port of Bully for the Wii. That was their connection to Rockstar. So, I mean, maybe Rockstar is going to do. They're going to have them be their port house.
Well, did they do all the scholarship editions, even the one for 360, or was it just the Wii version?
I'm not sure about that. I know they did the Wii, but maybe they're just going to have them do ports for other platforms of their games. Because I mean, before they did that, Mad Dog's last two games were Age of Empire or Empire Earth 3, which was terrible. And then before that was Star Trek Legacy, which was very disappointing.
So we were hoping that game was going to be really good, but
right. I mean, it looked really promising. I'm a huge Star Trek nerd. I was all psyched for it, and then it comes out, and it's
Would you say that it was like the Enterprise of Star Trek games?
Just about. Well, yeah.
It sounded like it gave you gallstones there.
It's so conflicting when you know you're a big fan of a franchise like that and it's kind of, I mean, it's just so basic and not really stand outish at all. I mean, it worked.
I was going to say it almost would have been better if it had just like completely sucked.
Right.
So you could just like harsh on it and right.
Yeah.
And not feel compelled to play it at all.
A lot of it did suck. I mean, like they got all five of the captains together, and their voice performances were generally phoned in, and the story was not so good, and yeah, a lot of stuff like that. But I mean, the gameplay itself was super basic and didn't really. I mean, if you could have replaced those ships with just about anything, and it would have fit just as well as into Star Trek. So it was, you know, kind of tacked on, and yeah.
Well, so do you think that this means that Mad Dog is going to be leaving RTSs altogether then?
I would not be surprised.
Wow. I mean, Empire Earth 3 was the last real RTS they did. Empire Earth 2 was awesome, but 3 was just so bad. And if you actually check out their archive website, because right now, if you go to the Mad Dog Software website, it just says Rockstar New England. If you go to the old site, there's no trace of Empire Earth 3 at all. Like, it's as if the game didn't exist.
Revisionist history.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, like a studio like that, though, I mean, they put out a couple of bombs in a row. You know, they probably weren't able to get funding from a publisher for their next game. Selling out was probably their only option, other than shutting down.
Fair enough.
It
just seems odd, you know, who bought them. It's still a strange marriage to me, but you know, hey,
oh, yeah,
I'm glad that in this case, you know, no one apparently lost their job or anything like that. Mad Dog didn't go out of business, so that's a good thing. Another good thing this week is that if you hate copy protection, there's some very good news for you, because Stardock is now going to be publishing gas-powered games Demigod.
Which came as a big surprise to us. I mean, we were last week we when we recorded the podcast, we had just talked to Brad Wardell, and he had told us about it. But the CEO of Stardock, Brad Wardell, he had just been in the office, told us about that, but we couldn't talk about it until this Monday. So yeah, that was really surprising, because until that point, Gaspowered had said they were going to self-publish, which would have meant for them they had to create their own distribution system, right. Which is a huge expense. So, but Stardock just so happened to have something in the works.
Well, that's why I'm wondering if maybe Gaspowered Games is still mostly self-publishing it. You know, they're funding it themselves, but as far as distribution, they're just leaving that up to Stardock.
I mean, that doesn't seem to be the way that Brad was talking about it. He said that that they have budgeted their funding for updates after the game comes out. So that seems to be coming from Stardock. So, oh, okay. I mean, the development up to this point has been all gas-powered games, but I guess they're going to get another infusion of cash from Stardock. And this is going to be very nice for Stardock as well, because they're going to have a big exclusive game on their Impulse service. When that launches, or I guess it'll be, because I guess they pushed Demigod back until February. It was going to come out at the end of this year, but it's going to be February 09 now. So they could add a few extra little good things that Stardock wants, and integrate it more into their online things like achievements and things like that. So,
are they also going to be releasing a box version as well?
They are.
Okay.
Stardock does do. I mean, they published Sins of the Solar Empire. That's on shelves and also, you know, they're Galsiv games. So they already have a distribution network for retail.
And all those games don't have any copy protection on them. So that's great news if you, you know, just hate to have to deal with it.
Right, and we discussed the copy protection that Impulse is going to have last week, which is going to be a very mild form. You know, it's not going to stop you from playing if you don't have an internet connection or something like that. So you'll be able to play it pretty much as though, you know, you just installed it off a CD and you throw the CD away. So,
but don't be a clown and go exploiting that.
Exactly. Don't be a loser.
Uncool.
Go buy the game. And speaking of other cool games that are going to be coming out later this year, we got to go and see Fallout 3 yesterday.
Yay!
So Dan is our resident Fallout expert, because I know you love the series. What did you think?
Well, I'm always impressed by you know, Bethesda's work on it. They're doing a really good job of just staying true to the franchise in general. I mean, they are changing some things and elaborating on things like the vault uniforms are no longer your, you know, body, like the skin tight bodysuit kind of thing. And you know, you can find forum posters complaining about just about anything. So that one tickled me when they complained that the vault suits now have pockets. But I mean, there's a lot of really good stuff in there. That they showed us a lot of the character creation stuff, which is it's really really innovative how they've done this. I mean, in Oblivion, for example, you start out and you create your character, decide how he's going to look and their race and everything like that. And you know, as you go through that opening tutorial, you kind of set your preferences, but it just pops up and says, do you want to be this? Do you want to be that?
Well, no, you get asked a lot of questions, though. Right.
But this, you actually kind of start the game essentially before you're actually doing the character creation.
Right. And you actually, you actually start out as a baby being born, and you know you see you're like you're coming out into the world and you see your father there, and he says, "Oh, you're going to need a name. We've discussed it, and we've decided on." And then it pops up with the thing you can type in your name. It's like, oh, that's a great name, isn't it? And you know, it builds it into the story of you growing up, right. which is pretty cool. I think it's a much more immersive way of doing
How the tutorial works too, right? I think I read.
The entire tutorial is built into like these little segments in which you're growing up from a baby all the way up to like 16 or so.
Mm-hmm. Like you get a gun for your birthday, and then you get to fire the gun, and that's how you learn how to shoot.
Because who doesn't?
Right. Well, you get a BB gun,
right?
So that also calls back to the earlier Fallout games, because there was a BB gun in those.
They really do, like you were discussing the attention to detail. It's really something else. Like the I guess maybe this is a function of just having such a good technologically such a good base to begin with for the game like this. But they really seem to have figured out the like sweet spot between how long it takes them, like they don't just go on forever and ever, like how long it takes them to actually make a game and actually addressing all of the things that really make the experience immersive. You know, like they were talking about tweaking all of the like the camera angles for vats to sort of make sense depending on where you're standing and with the different weapons and stuff. Like that's the kind of thing I would never have thought about until I was in the game, and then you know that same like the visual repetition would really probably start to grate on you after a while. But it's smart. They're smart.
Yeah, and it does seem like something that they only thought of after playing the game for a while. And this is VATS is the targeting system where you know it pauses the real time combat. You zoom in on an enemy, and you can target specific body parts for you know a dice roll hit see if you can blow it off. But if you just keep doing that over and over again and just zoom in on the guy in the same way, that's going to get very repetitive and monotonous. So they're reworking it, and this wasn't quite done in the demo, so we didn't get to see it. But they cautioned us, don't judge us on this right now because it's not done. It changes camera angles depending on where you're standing in the room and where the enemy is standing in the room, so you get a good cinematic look at them, and it's not the same thing every time. Which I mean, I just love variety in games, because repetition just kills things for me.
And speaking of variety, I mean, a few weeks ago, people were going nuts when they found out that the game had 200 endings based on the combination of data. they revealed to us yesterday that it's actually more like 500 different endings based on, just the combination of different experiences that you have within the game, how it all plays out at
but
the end.
Did they talk about how different those endings would be? I mean, or are they going to be like... subtle dialogue change or...
Yeah, I mean, they are iterations of each other, It's just based on, like, what you did during the game.
Yeah, it's what we discussed last time when we were talking about the 200 endings, which is all the places you go to will have their own individual ending based on what you did there, and the combinations of those endings is up to 500. So you could get any one of 500 endings, depending on how you acted at place A, place B, place C, the combinations there create a different ending for you. Which I mean that's some huge replayability there. And unlike Oblivion, in this one, you cannot go and do every quest as the same character. So as you go through one door, others close to you basically. So you will have to replay it to play the entire game. Which I think is great because I mean, it really did seem like a little bit unrealistic how I could go and like do all the Assassin's Guild missions in Oblivion and nobody would be pissed off at me. Thieves Guild, I guess.
Yeah. Well, one other thing that I kind of got, I don't know if anybody else picked up on this, but I kind of got a BioShock vibe from it. Especially when you were facing off against some of the mutants and you would get like flashes of their previous lives.
Yeah, there was a glowing one, how they refer to some of the more powerful ghouls. And ghouls and mutants are different. Gotta remember your Fallout characters. The super mutants are
you mean the splicers?
Right.
No, the super mutants have been mutated by a government engineered virus that creates super soldiers. It also makes most of them dumb. But the ghouls are just people that were exposed to radiation, and they're the regular ghouls who can be friendly and will talk to you if you walk up to them. Then there are the feral ghouls who will just attack you on sight, and then there are the glowing ones who are exposed to so much radiation
that they
literally glow, and they have a radiation attack they can use on you. And their radiation attack even heals other, like, feral ghouls around them. So they're very difficult to kill. And when you walk up to them, like Chuck said, they do a brief flash of, like, it's kind of like a telepathic thing where you see the world around them as they used to see it, like before they were exposed to all this radiation. It is a very creepy effect. Oh, we also saw dog meat.
Yeah, dog meat.
It was a classic Fallout character, a dog actually, but he will.
Hence the name, right?
Well, there could be people named Dog Meat. There's a bounty hunter named Dog, after all.
Isn't he in jail now?
I don't think he's in jail.
He got arrested.
Yeah, he had to bounty hunt himself.
Well, he was arrested, right. But that. Over something in Mexico, but that blew over. But the trouble he got in lately was racial slurs. But
anyway, back to dog meat.
Yeah, back
as
to
we
dog,
were right.
Dog meat is you know, like everybody will have this random encounter at some point. They just don't tell you exactly where it's going to happen, or there's no set point where it's going to happen. But relatively early in the game, you'll come across dog meat, and you know he's mourning his owner who has been killed by some thugs. So you can go along and befriend him, and he will be your companion if you want him to be. You can have him help you in a fight. You can have him search out items for you, and he'll actually go and look in the environment and find weapons or food in the area if there is any.
But will it love you?
It's not a Peter Molyneux dog.
I'm sorry, I'm not programmed for that.
Right.
Hey, Dan, now this is a really... This might be a stupid question, because I'm not up on the Fallout universe.
You're very stupid, Chuck.
I'm sorry. It wasn't one of my favorite franchises, like I know it is yours. Mm-hmm. But does Fallout 3 actually take place in the continuity, or is it like a remake?
It does take place in the continuity. It's just in a very different... The Fallout 1 and 2 took place on the West Coast, in San Francisco, LA, Nevada area. And Fallout 3 takes place in Washington, D.C.,
So is this a different dog meat that you're meeting that just happens to have the same name?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So I guess in theory, well, not really, because this takes, you know, many years after Fallout 1 and 2. I forget exactly how many years, maybe like 30 years after. So unless he's a very old dog.
Maybe old robot dog meat.
Yeah, he could be a robot, he could be a mutant, you just don't know. Maybe that will be revealed to us.
Oh, awesome.
I guess the one other thing that they told us that we didn't know before was that they will be supporting DirectX 10 and Vista, although they said that most everything they wanted to do they could do in DX9 just fine. So XP users are going to see a great game.
And they are supporting Games for Windows Live.
Yeah, well, there's no multiplayer, though. But they're going to tie...
But they're supporting it for achievements.
Achievements, yes.
And I salute them for the attempt. I hope it works out.
Yeah, I just hope that it doesn't. I don't imagine that we'll have to log in to play it. I really hope that we don't, because that's really cumbersome and annoying.
All right, well, I guess that wraps it up for the news. So on to Master PC Theater. Welcome.
Dun, dun, dun.
Welcome to Master PC Theater. First of all, e-props go out to Superfresh, who was the first to correctly guess that Grim Fandango was the game we reenacted two podcasts ago. Thanks a lot, guys, for completely dropping the ball and not doing it last week.
No problem.
Yeah, no problem. I guess I know what happens when I'm not here. The Master PC Theater just falls apart. Anyway, much love for Superfresh, Yugo, and all that stuff. So this is how it's going to work. We're going to reenact a scene from a PC game, and you have to guess which game it's from. The first person to name the correct game on this episode's podcast comments at www.pcgamerpodcast.com are going to receive serious props on our hopefully next podcast. And now, this week's episode of Master PC Theater. Where's Lupino?
Screw you.
Bad start, Vinny.
Police brutality.
I rate pretty high on that.
Yeah, you can't just hurt me in cold blood.
Just keep telling yourself that. Listen good, Candyman. I'm not going to be anybody's fall guy. I want to know where your boss is hiding. There was no glory in this. I hadn't asked for this crap. Trouble had come to me in big, dark swarms. The good and just were like gold dust in the city. I had no illusions. I was not one of them. I was no hero. Just me and the gun and the crook. My options had decreased to a singular course.
I'll tell you. Just don't hurt me no more. Lupino's at Ragla Rock. The nightclub. Book me. Take me in. Haul me to the freaking jail. Just don't hurt me.
Your rights will be read at your funeral.
Woo!
Alright.
Yeah.
Nice.
I know it.
Really? Don't say it.
Okay, I won't.
It's Sam and Max.
I know. Yeah. Should be Sam and Max. Okay, so if you can name that game, hurry to our podcast comments right now and submit your guess. I'd like to thank listener Steve Rad for sending in the script. If you'd like us to continue doing Master PC Theater, we still need your help. If you have a favorite scene from a PC game, send us a transcript of the scene to editor@pcgamer.com, and we just might act it out on the show. Now, you can't name the game yourself for fame and personal glory and e-props and all that stuff, but we will credit you for having sent it in to us. Scenes should be for at least two people and shouldn't be too terribly obvious. All right, so let's move on to some questions.
Hey, PC Gamer Podcast. This is Justin from Indiana. Longtime listener, first-time caller. I had a question for you guys about the price point at which games become undisputably viable. I ask this because this weekend, as most of you know, Prey went for $5 on Steam. I picked it up Friday night after I saw the price point. It's a game I've been kind of wanting to play for a while. $20, I was like, I'll buy it someday when I have the time. When I logged into Steam to play Team Fortress 2 and I saw the pop-up for Prey, I was like, wow, I'll just immediately pulled out my card and bought it. And I had a question for you along those lines is, what is the price point where games, even though you don't have the time to play them, become, I got to buy it just to have it? Thanks for the podcast, and talk to you all later.
That's a good question.
That's a good question.
It is, it depends on the person, right?
I mean, yeah, it depends on the person, depends on the game. You know, how much disposable income do you have? The way I look at it is, especially now with services like Steam and like GameTap and now Impulse, these games are not going to like not be available anymore. So, and they're not going to get any more expensive. So by buying them now, you're not necessarily going to save yourself any money, unless you want to buy it so that you'll play it.
But they may have like limited sales.
Oh yeah, if they have a sale like Prey. I mean, Prey, $5 for Prey is pretty outstanding.
Bucks for any AAA game or any game that we've given over 70% is definitely worth buying. I mean, if you can spend what you would spend for 10 tacos at Jack in the Box and get a game, that's right. A great deal.
Yeah, I know. In the past, my marginal price has usually been around $15. Like, if it was a game that I kind of thought, I might want that, I'll usually pony up $15 for it.
Yeah, and that's fair. I mean,
which is to say, people should just always wait till games are $15 to $20 before they buy. $50 is a fair price to play for a great game.
Right, definitely. And I know I certainly can't wait, until a game is a year or two old to play a game I'm really looking forward to. I mean, Fallout 3, I'll be playing that on day one. So, man, they don't tell Bethesda this, but I would probably pay more for that. But but yeah, I I don't think that's going to be that big an issue. That people are going to wait. But another one, like I saw Freedom Force on Amazon for $7. I sent that around to all my friends that didn't have it, and told them to buy it.
Yeah, that's not on digital probably, distribution, right?
Yeah. So a lot of them did. Like I think three of my friends bought it for that.
I would love to have seen that email. Buy this! Buy it now!
I was a little bit more cordial than that, but
I hate you, Dan.
That's my usual. They get those every day.
I hate everything, Dan.
Yeah.
Except for Freedom Force.
Yeah.
So bye.
Except Freedom Force.
See, you got to set the bar low. So I send them, I hate you every day. And then when I send them something else.
They know you're really onto something, right?
Right,
that's
really
right.
Hey, PC Gamer crew, this is Chris from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Hi, I'm calling because I've heard some rumors, and I figured you guys would be best to dissuade them or encourage them. I have heard the following old games are going to get a new lease on life, a reimagining or a new game, if you will. They're Wing Commander, Privateer, XCOM, and Star Control. I was wondering if you guys could answer those questions on whether they will be coming back, and just look back and any fond memories you may have of these games, just let us know. Be interested in hearing you. Thank you. Bye.
Gosh, fond memories I have of XCOM. Let me think.
We don't have that sort of time.
I was just going to say.
and actually, I could go on for a while about Wing Commander, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there isn't any real information about any of those. It's all just rumors.
Yeah, it's all just rumors at this point. And I guess, EA owns the rights to Privateer and Wing Commander at this point?
Yeah, well, Privateer is Wing Commander. So.
Well, but I mean...
No, there was Privateer Wing Commander, and Privateer was a separate franchise.
Yeah, Privateer is a separate franchise.
Because Privateer was awesome because it was open world, like open space environment, like kind of like GTA in space.
Yeah, like... Well,
wasn't
like
it Wing Commander, Privateer?
And then there was Privateer 2?
I think they took place in the same universe.
Yeah. So it's the same property. In any case, EA owns them.
They're related.
Yeah, and there have been rumors about that. There have been rumors about XCOM. Has there been? I haven't heard any rumors about Star Control. Have you checked?
I have not heard a thing about that. No.
And what was the other game you mentioned?
I think that was all.
That was it. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, that was it.
We cannot confirm nor deny.
But I mean, EA is, or I'm sorry, not EA. Eidos is bringing back, Deus Ex 3 and allegedly
possibly.
FIFA, so
yeah.
Possibly. So you never know.
Well, no, they are bringing back Deus Ex. They may be bringing back Thief.
Isn't that what you said?
That's what you said.
Okay.
So we definitely hope so. And if anyone knows that they are, give us a call and we'll write about it.
And you know what? I love about games is that when you have these new sequels, it's not like Hollywood where everyone groans. It's like, oh, it's another crappy remake. We want these games to come out. If they redo XCOM, that would be like the best thing ever.
Well, for me, I'd throw a party. But I mean, the difference between these and movies is that with movies, I mean, you're still just looking at a picture. It's not an interactive experience. You can't do more in a remake of a movie than you could in an old movie. I mean, it's the same story. You're still just watching it,
Well, of course, that was some of the criticism that was lodged against Wing Commander 3 and Wing Commander 4, though.
Right.
You were just watching.
True. But I mean, those, like, especially with a series like that, where there were a lot of games, in rapid succession, then people will get kind of tired of it. But then when it comes back after a long period, that's really exciting because there's going to be a huge leap forward in gameplay.
I will say about Wing Commander, though, that my first experience with Wing Commander was Wing Commander 3. And so I played that, and I was like, oh, my God, this is fantastic. And there was this at the time, I was living in Austin, Texas, and they would have this big, like, it was kind of like a secondhand computer show, where they took this convention center, and basically it was just filled with computer junk. And I remember going through, like, all of the bins of old computer games looking for Wing Commanders 1 and 2 to see if I could play them, on my system. And I think I spent an entire weekend doing that.
And how did that work out for you?
I did finally find it.
Good times.
I had some problems actually running it, though, on my system at the time, just because my system was a little bit too new, you know?
A happy ending.
So, yeah, Mark Hamill, if you're out there, call us and tell us what's up.
Yeah, exactly. So do we have time for another question, or should we move on to playlist?
I've got a question here that you guys might be able to give some good insight on, so I'll play it for you.
Hi, guys. It's Zachary Keyes from North Carolina. I have a question about game journalism. Now, I've been a gamer my entire life, and I follow the news as far as things like release dates go. But in the past few years, I really started looking at the industry a bit more deeply and following it as far as analysis of the industry goes. And I started my blog a couple of months ago, and I found that I really enjoyed writing about this stuff that I love, but I'd also really like to get paid for it. So my question is, how does one go about getting to that point? Nowadays, do you need a degree specifically in journalism before you can be considered as a viable writer? Or is it more that they need to be able to reference your previous work via your blog and know that you can write with some skill about the topic? I look forward to hearing your guys' thoughts on the matter, considering that I can't really think of anybody who'd be better placed to comment on it. And keep up the great work. It's an awesome podcast. Thanks.
Well, I know, speaking from personal experience, I would definitely say that having the passion for video games and for writing about video games definitely trumps having a journalism degree. In fact, really,
None of us do.
Yeah, I know very few people in the video game journalism industry, for good or bad, who actually have a journalism degree.
Yeah, I have a American literature degree, but that's not really the same thing.
I would say that, you know, having a blog is definitely a good start. You know, try sending off some of your samples to just, you know, whoever will take them and read them, and, you know, try and become a freelancer.
Sounds like someone should enter the America's Next Top Music Gamer Reviewer contest.
Oh, I was hoping not to bring that up because
I
need to talk about the finalists this week. I will next week, really.
We're going to hold Jack to that this time.
I know. Yeah, hold me to it, and I'll get to it.
Megaman Bond just can't wait. He's like pulling his hair out.
Well, I know. You know, the thing is that there actually are a couple of our regular writers on our forums who, you know, I recognize their name after I've already read their submission, and they've done a pretty good job. So I'm hoping that, you know, some of these guys actually make it to the final list.
Yeah, we can always use new good freelancers. But like Chuck said, you know, writing experience is the best thing you can have, and just make sure that we have to make sure that you can write, that your reviews not only get your point across, but they're not going to be more work for us to edit than it would be for us to actually do the review ourselves. That's the whole point of freelancing. So
I actually going back to one of the things that I wrote about in my latest column that's going to be coming up, the reviews intro column, I kind of do talk about some of the things I noticed going through the submissions, like some of the major mistakes that people make in their reviews. And I'll go ahead and just list some of them right now, just so you get an idea of what you should be looking out for. First of all, when you're reviewing a game, make sure that you describe it. Because, you know, it's not enough to just say, well, this game is really cool, or this game sucks ass. Talk about, you know, what is the game? You have to, you know, make me feel kind of like I've played it. You know, I know some games are a little bit too complex to actually, you know, get across all the you know, the intricacies of the gameplay, but try and describe it as best as you can. Double check your work, please. Go back, reread what you wrote. I mean, there so many people just kind of send us off like their first draft. And sometimes we get first drafts from our freelancers as well. You know, they'll just kind of like send them off, and you know they didn't go back and read it because there's like just, you know, missing words or, you know, like just misspellings that, you know that they would have caught if they went back and read it a second time.
Yes, master the use of the forms of there, the different spellings of there.
Yes,
please.
And for the love of God, use spell check. It's in Word.
It's in Firefox.
Yeah. You know, it's so easy to use. Number three, remember that the game review is not about you. You know, it's you might want to talk about yourself a lot in a review or try and be overly funny. Don't do it. Remember, it's about the game. And
it's not an ain't it cool news review.
Right. If you're going to use humor, make sure that the humor is in service of the game review.
You are probably not Yahtzee. Yahtzee excluded.
Right.
Well, but even Yahtzee, I mean, he's entertaining, but you know, he usually gets to the heart of, you know, what it is about the game that, you know, he likes or he doesn't like.
Right.
And number four, don't waste time. There was one submission that we got. He spent about half of his review writing about how few words he had. he just couldn't believe, I only have 150 words. So he's about like 70 words into it, and then he actually gets on to the game. Don't do that. Remember, every word is gold. It's all precious, especially when you're talking about print journalism. And really, even when you're talking about online journalism, because I think that's one of the weaknesses of a lot of online journalism is that, you know, so many people think, I have like limitless space. I have infinite space, so I can just write forever. Well, you really have like only so much space to actually hook somebody and to keep them interested. So
TLDR.
Oh, I was just going to say that.
Yeah. So, you know, please, you know, limit yourself. Okay, and now I'll get off my soapbox. I guess it's a perfect time for us to go to playlist.
Yes, it is.
Kristen, what have you been playing?
I'm playing Age of Conan.
Conan.
I've actually been playing the beta of Age of Conan because that is our next cover story. So I don't want to get too much into it yet.
We cannot talk about it at all because it is still an NDA.
That's true. Good point. So there you go.
in fact, don't forget that you even heard that we're playing it.
Right.
Yeah, we're going to have to come by and kill you later.
They'll have to behead you.
Dan, what are you playing?
I've been playing Sins of Solar Empire a lot with Norm. We had a losing. We've won some games.
No. You've been losing.
What do you mean I've been losing? Well, I mean, yeah, last night because you didn't come and help me when the guy who was like really good came over and started kicking my ass after I. So there's this guy that was. We were playing 2-on-2. One guy was really good. One guy was not so good. The really good guy was kicking Norm's ass. So I'm like, okay, I'll go attack him and draw him away from Norm. He then comes and kicks my ass while Norm sits back and does nothing for me. Thank you, Norm.
Best defense, good offense.
Yes. And then he likes to point out that I lost. So what else? I've been playing some Assassin's Creed. I just posted a video to PCGamer.com. It's also on GamesRadar.com about not the actual gameplay. I'm enjoying the gameplay. It's the leaving the gameplay that's the issue, because they make you go through 11 steps to quit out of the game. I mean, you can just Alt F4, but it should not be that hard. Or, you know, you should not have to do that. You should just be able to say, you know, escape, quit. You know, save and quit. That's all. That's really all you should ever have to do when quitting a game. 11 steps. Oh my god.
So I have been playing the Age of the Game That Shall Not Be Named, the beta for our cover story, along with Kristen. And
we should point out this is not a review. Don't say why you're reviewing a beta.
Not a review, and I can't say anything about it. So, mum on that. And let's see. Also, in my spare time, I've been playing on my DS Professor Layton and the Village of Inconvenient Puzzles.
Professor,
shut up!
I did love the Penny Arcade about that one.
Yeah. that pretty much accurately describes my feeling for it now. Now I actually find that comic to be funny.
And that's rare for Chuck. Chuck doesn't usually get it.
Norm, what have you been playing?
Some Sins, a whole lot of TF2, a whole lot of TF2. I did start Indigo Prophecy, and although it shows great promise, I cannot get past this third chapter intro part, which is really
Norm, you just ruined that there's a third chapter.
Oh, God.
Spoil. Oh, more edits.
You know, I was going to play it. Now I know it goes to three.
God there's, damn it, no.
There's a segment where you have a limited amount of time to do something, and the game
ends.
Unless you can finish all the tasks in that time. And they're intuitive tasks, but after you actually finish, like, I did this and that, you realize you have to do more. And every time I cut it very close, but I can't make it to the very end. So I have to reload it, and I have to start from the beginning.
God, it's been so long since I played that game, but I remember that part, and I'll have to think about how I got past it.
You gotta, like, wash your hands, you gotta
throw the
shirt in the wash,
and
you gotta bandage yourself up and do all that stuff, and then every time you have to open a door, and you go into your room, you have to reopen the door again. It takes forever.
Let me think about it. You know what, are you playing it here, or are you playing it at home?
I'm playing it at home, but I'll go back to it. I mean, I'm playing with a mouse and keyboard, and I think that's actually one of those games that might be better with the controller.
With the gamepad, and it helped a lot, even though it's still hard to control with the camera and stuff. But
so, Andy, what have you been playing this week?
Well, I guess I did just finish Indigo Prophecy and Sam & Max Episode 4, so I can play the new one. I think it comes out today, doesn't it?
It does indeed,
hooray!
Yes.
So, yeah, those are great games. Also, a little bit of TF2. But is Assassin's Creed a good game? I think I need a new single-player game.
It is good. Yep. I mean, it's I'm not that far into it yet.
Cool.
But I am enjoying it so far. It is very Batman.
Well, that's
I guess the one thing that kind of annoys me so far is that there's pretty much no reason not to kill every guard you see. I mean, you get the sense that it's supposed to be like a stealth game, right?
Yeah.
But not really. I mean, you can just go killing everybody, And like, if you don't want to kill everybody, you can just run away, and they don't have any real means of stopping you.
So this is basically a medieval assassin simulator.
Yes. Jack Thompson will take
Jack Thompson's going to be all over this. All right. Well, thanks to everyone for joining us today. If you would like to subscribe to PC Gamer Magazine, head on over to www.pcgamer.com/subscribe, and please send us some money. And if you'd like to submit a question to the podcast, you can call 1-877-404-1337, extension 724, and leave a voice message. Or if you want to submit an MP3 instead, please email it to pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. On behalf of Kristen, Dan, Norm, Andy, and myself, thanks for listening, and see you next week.
Think of what part you're talking about, but I can't.
When the cop first comes to the door,
and
you have to do
your
thing in the
apartment.
See, that's
now I know there are cops and doors.
Wait, you know what? I have
Andy Graham,
Landshark.
For some reason, my motherboard has decided that it's going to like reset my my connections to my headphones all the time. So I have to unplug it and plug it back in. That's fun.
Don't spoil. But
now, is it really a spoiler? Is it really a spoiler, though?
It is. I would consider it a spoiler.
I mean, if it's something you see before you even see what you think it's supposed to be.
It's not advertised in the box. It's a spoiler.
I think that's bunk, personally. I think it's like in The Usual Suspects. If you tell people what's going on there, or like Fight Club. If you tell people what's going on there, you watch the first 3 seconds of Fight Club. That's not giving anything away.
Huh?
Pointless argument.
Wait, what?
I'm not. Let's stop. The game takes 11 steps to jump out. Moving on.
Well, I'm personally, I'm outraged that you spoiled the game by mentioning that there's a spoiler. I'm expecting many, many emails to come to you.
I dispute the claim that that's a spoiler.
I'm just going to have to edit this whole thing.
Thanks a lot, Dan.
Oh, my God. Has anybody read Game Politics today?
No, what?
Did we get your playlist, Kristen? Oh, yeah, you're the first one.
Conan, yeah.
That's Roy? Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. Apparently, Jack Thompson is emailing people saying, complaining that the FBI refuses to talk to him.
FBI won't talk to me.